All right, we're going to start off again with the Lumni supercomputer and meshing.
Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Boris, and I want to talk to you about my adventures scaling our finite element code on the Lumni supercomputer and how we had to improve our meshing code to work on it. So first thing first, I will describe briefly what is Gmesh, the mesh generator we use in our team. And then I will describe the kind of simulations we want to run. And I will focus on two aspects, the overlap of mesh subdomains and how it makes it challenging to have a scaling code on massively parallel machines. So what is Gmesh? Gmesh is a free and open source mesh generator which can build 2D, 3D meshes suited for finite elements. It has a scripting language binding for many languages, C++, Python, Fortran, Julia. It has also a GUI. You can use it on the command line, so it's very versatile. And it can generate that kind of meshes. So millions of elements. It is multi-threaded, it can be on complex geometries, and it's a very fun tool to use. And so this is a mesh generator I use for my own finite element simulations. My main field of interest is time harmonic wave simulations, wave simulations with a known frequency. It has many applications such as reactor design, imaging, and it can be acoustic waves, electromagnetic waves, so it's a broad family. But each time I want to do finite elements to solve this kind of problem. And when you do finite elements for time harmonic waves, you end up with a very large complex linear system with a sparse matrix. Typically you can go up to hundreds of millions or billions of unknown. And at this large scale, a sparse direct solver is too expensive to use, and classical iterative methods such as multigrids don't work well. So we want to use an iterative solver, but not this one. And so this is the reason we use mostly a domain decomposition method. Once again, it's a very broad family of numerical methods, which are naturally suited for parallel computing, because you split your very large problems into many subproblems, you solve them in parallel, and you use it as a preconditioner, as some kind of iterative procedure to recover an entire solution. And so it is an iterative method overall, but you need to solve many subproblems in parallel many times. And when you do that, you can solve very large problems, such as this plane reactor intake, which requires a billion of unknowns at least, because it's a high frequency wave, so you have many, many unknown points. But we can make it work. This particular test case was run on the Lumni supercomputer, which is a EuroHPC cluster in Finland, which has a main advantage of having enough resources for that kind of problem. So for instance, back to a plane, this time for the exhaust, it ran on Lumni with 500 nodes, which is the most you can ask for from the cluster. And we could solve this problem in 15 minutes, in solving a problem with 1.3 billion unknowns. In this case, it was 4,000 MPI processes with 16 threads each. So that was the state of the art in my team before I came in. So it's a high order mesh split with Metis, which generates a non-overlapping partition. And it ran over 4,000 subdomains. And so there were two limitations, is that going above this, 8,000, 16,000 subdomains is not very effective. And also it was a non-overlapping partition, but sometimes you prefer to have overlapping subdomains because some solvers rely on it, and we wanted to know if there were good or bad solvers. And so these are the two things I want to talk about today. So for the overlaps, I think a picture is worth a thousand words. So you open your favorite mesh with Gmesh, you want to split it, say, on four subdomains. So that was already existing. You call Metis, it provides a partition, and you use it. We build interface elements so you can do the coupling. Now the new thing is that we can create overlaps. So we take a subset of the neighboring subdomains and we append to them to have an extended subdomain. And we use this extended subdomain as a computation component in a preconditioner. And so this is a new feature we implemented, which was a very fun adventure. But once it's done, the API is pretty simple and you can query the overlaps, also the boundaries. So the implementation is that we have a view on existing elements for the overlaps, but we need to create new elements for the boundaries. In particular, we have two kinds of boundaries. We have an outer boundary and what we call inner boundary, but the word is maybe not completely appropriate. So the green part here is the extension of the already existing boundary, and the red part is the artificial boundary of the overlap, but it actually is a curve inside your computation domain. And so it's critical to know the difference because you want to apply different boundary conditions on these two families of curves because it impacts correctness and convergence of your thing. And so we added these features into GH. And once it's done, we can do some numerical experiments to perform large-scale simulations on Lumi. This will be my test case until the end of the talk. It's a geophysics test case for acoustic simulations. So it's an heterogeneous medium with varying wave velocity, blue with water where the waves are slow, and yellow, red are rocks or soil where waves travel much faster. And so it's an interesting problem because you have varying wavelengths, reflection, refraction, and interesting physics happening. And I want to simulate waves at the highest frequency possible. And the higher the frequency, the more expensive the problem, because higher frequency means shorter wavelengths, which means a finer mesh, and so more degrees of freedom. And so I go from 1.6 to 6.25 Hertz, which for in our mesh translates from 11 to 600 million of unknowns. And we do it in a weak scaling way. So we want to try to keep the sub-problem size constant, and we add more resources as we increase the frequency. And so we need one process for every 85,000 unknown. And so using the resources from Lumi, it went from 2 to 128 nodes, each node having 128 CPUs, threads. And so a typical example of the kind of mesh we have, the overlap is not shown, but it was computed. So you can see each color is a partition, so a different subdomain. They are designed to have the same size in terms of element count for load balancing, but they actually represent different sizes in terms of geometrical space. And because we have smaller elements in some areas and larger elements in some areas to match the local wavelengths. In the original file format we used, we have one file per subdomain. Each file contains the necessary elements, the nodes, so this part of the mesh. But we chose to duplicate the mesh topology, so each file contains information about which subdomain touches which subdomain, what's the name of the interface between those subdomains, and that kind of things, because it was simpler. But actually, at some point, it will turn out to be an issue. I'll come back to it later. But now that we have overlapping subdomains, you also need to export elements from the overlaps, so the files get a bit bigger. You also need more bookkeeping information to know which subset to use and that kind of things. You also need to store boundaries of overlaps. So the whole thing is a bit more expensive. And so we start with a fairly naive implementation of exporting all elements from our subdomain and the elements from the neighboring subdomain, which is a bit too much because we don't need all elements from the neighboring subdomain. But it's simpler and it's just a mesh, so we don't expect it to be too expensive. So there is some redundancy. And it worked on small problems. We managed to run on up to 40 million unknowns, and then going above, it's getting complicated because you have too much duplication, and sometimes you can't load all the meshes because you have way too much data. And especially as you increase the problem size, you have a more regular mesh, which translates to more overlapped subdomains, so more elements to export. So we need to do something a bit less, more efficient. And so we decided to export only the necessary elements, the necessary nodes, which takes some time because you need to loop over elements to see if they are needed or not to keep a set. But it makes for smaller files and less memory consumption and less waste. So we do that for the elements and for the nodes. And it helps. We could go a bit higher and solve 80 million unknown problems. But going above was still crashing because we ran out of memory. And so as someone who loves to waste energy, I just thought I run a job with more memory to see if it worked. And it didn't. And I was a bit confused because we export only what we need, or a subset of elements, subset of nodes. And it turned out that the mesh topology I mentioned, so the fact that we keep data on which subdomain is connected to what subdomain and that kind of things, which is duplicated across every file. When you have 8,000 partitions, it's not negligible anymore. And that actually makes up for most of the memory you consume. And so what we ignored because it was a minor overhead was actually wasting more than half of our memory just to store useless information. And so we felt a bit dumb when we noticed. And it was a bit annoying to fix because many parts of the code relied on this assumption. So it took almost a month to fix. But once we did it and everything worked well, we could go much higher and we could solve problems with 200, 300, 1600 unknowns and go to up to 6,000 subdomains. Which is four times what we could do before, and it's with overlap, and we could even go higher in theory. Now the mesh files are much, much smaller, and so we reached the efficiency we were hoping for. And using this, we could publish a paper comparing overlapping and non-overlapping numerical methods, and it turned out the non-overlapping one is but a bit faster and requires less memory, so all this for that. But it was worth investigating. Very small subset of our paper where we do some weak scaling studies. It's a bit complex to read if you're not familiar with the problem, because we expect that even in the case of perfect weak scaling, the time increases with the frequency, because the cost per iteration is stable. But the number of iterations still grows. So we expected a linear relationship between time and frequency if we had the resources as the frequency increases. And we could show, so the ORAS on the left is the overlapping method and the OSM on the right is the non-overlapping method. And the non-overlapping method is faster, short story long. So once we published this paper, we could polish a bit our implementation. So we recently made the overlap boundaries compatible with higher order elements. We changed the way we build the overlaps because it was a bit naive on the first time. Instead of having a subdomain looking for elements on its neighbors, each subdomain looks at its boundary and tells the other subdomains, hey, this should be in your overlap. And it's much simpler and much faster. And we finally merged last week all these changes in the main branch of Gmesh. It's not yet part of a release, but it will be in the next one. So if you're interested, you can already try it out. So it was a big story of what happened in my life last year. It was a long adventure, And so it's a good lesson on optimizing and scaling things, because at every step a new issue arises, and it's never the one you expect. It was a lesson in always profiling, questioning assumptions, because sometimes you think you know why your thing is consuming too much memory, and it's actually something completely different that you didn't think of. But it was very interesting to always improve, iterate, eliminate waste at each step. Going further forces you to find out what's the main issue. And it's a very fascinating thing to live. The last thing we haven't fixed yet is that we can do fast simulations when you load the mesh. But the time we take to export the mesh properly is a bit long, because we do extra checks to ensure we only export what we need, everything is correct, so it could be optimized a bit further. But we came a long way since last year. And that's about it for me. Just a small advertisement is that we're hosting the first Gmesh user meeting in Liège this summer. So if you happen to be a Gmesh user, feel free to come by and discuss this kind of things. And I'm open to questions if you have some. So the question is why I didn't use adaptive mesh refinement, right? Actually, we did. No, it's not adaptive. It's how to say it. We create the mesh in advance, but we know where it has to be fine and where it has to be coarse, because it's from the local wave speed, which is known. Also, once you have partitioned your mesh, changing the mesh density would be a bit of a mess. I'm not sure we plan for it. But in this case, we already know the ideal refinement level. Yeah?
Does Gmesh already, or are there plans to support GPUs?
So the question is, does Gmesh support GPUs? Great question. It's a work in progress. So the meshing process itself still runs on CPUs because it's not very GPU friendly. But one of my colleagues is performing the same kind of simulations I'm doing, but on GPUs. So it's not very natural because it's sparse algebra everywhere, and it's not naturally suited for GPUs. But essentially, you do the same thing as I do with subdomains, but you do much smaller subdomains, and you, instead of having one subdomain per thread, you have maybe 100 and 1,000 subdomains per GPU, and you can use 10 or 100 GPUs if you want, which is one more reason to partition efficiently. And in the future, we'll need to have maybe 100 subdomains per file instead of one file per subdomain, because the HPC admins don't like when we have 16,000 files as input. So far, they haven't murdered me yet. So the question is which GPU we used, in which technology. And I have to ask my colleague for details. So we have access to a Belgian cluster which uses NVIDIA GPUs, and we have access to Lumi which uses AMD. We're mostly prototyping of a smaller one, which is NVIDIA, it's still work in progress, but we're trying to be compatible with both. But there are still some compatibility issues with some libraries that only exist on one side. And we're comparing different backends for the algebra part, because we have some dense backends, some sparse backends, and it's very exploratory. So the question is, did I consider out-of-core computations? Do you mean for the simulation part or the... Yes, so for the mesh part, it's not really an issue for now. The only issue is time to export all the files, but we can do it. It eats a lot of memory, so sometimes you use what we call a fat node on the cluster, so a node which has more RAM and less CPUs because you just need a lot of RAM. So maybe it can go to up to a terabyte of RAM. And for the computation part, the solvers we use aim to avoid that. So you can use a sparse direct solver such as MIMS, which have an out-of-core capability, but it works, but it's slower. And even if you have enough memory, it's actually like five times slower than what we do. And so we save memory, we save time, and we don't have to mess up the disk. But it depends on the application, because we're interested in case we solve for multiple write-in sites. I'm focused on case with 50 or 100 write-in sites, but if you have thousands of write-in sites, maybe it's worth it to have a factorization of your matrix. Yes, so the question is, what is the Gmesh format like? So it's a custom format, but it has a binary and text version. Binary is just a bit faster to read, but all the implementations support both ways. And when you open the file, it detects which one was used. Can you repeat the last part? Okay, so the question was, well, if we use GPU partitioners and... Come again? Okay, yes, so the question is about alternatives to Metis. For now, we only support Metis. We thought about Parmetis, but there's licensing issue, and the Gmesh itself is sequential, so it's not immediate. We are working on prototypes of Omaze partitioners based on space filling curves, I think they told me, which are supposed to be much faster but give very rough partitions. I'm not very familiar with the GPU ones, but it would be nice at some point, probably. And with regard to the physics, there's no particular trick. We just give a graph of volume elements, so Metis knows the connection between tetrahedra, and we just ask for partitions with the same number of tetrahedra in each subdomain. Last one. Hexahedra? Yeah. So the question was, is there support for hexahedra or other kind of elements? There is support for hexahedral elements. Very recently, like last week, they started working on prototypes for polytopol elements. But it's very much of a draft for now. But hexahedra, yes. At least they exist in the format. I'm not sure the algorithm for generating them are as advanced, but they exist.